Hey there, real quick before we start today's podcast, I just added this little message to the front of this particular episode because I wanted to let you know about a really special event I have coming up at the end of October 2018. I've decided to do a very special free workshop just for my podcast listeners. So that's you. And this workshop is called The 6 Steps to Living an Organic Lifestyle Without Wasting Your Time or Overwhelming Yourself. Now, this is a free event that you can attend with me via the internet. So you don't have to get in your car and go anywhere. And I'm going to be sharing some of my very best tips for maximizing flavor and nutrition in our food and some of my personal secrets for managing this type of farm fresh lifestyle so that you don't overwhelm yourself. Now, at the end, I will be answering all of your questions, and I would just love to chat with you. So this will be a lot of fun. Now, to learn more about this live event, just go to livinghomegrown.com/event. And this event will be October 30th, 2018. I have 2 different workshops that day, so you can sign up for either one. And if you are listening to this after October 2018, I'm so sorry that I missed the opportunity to get to chat with you, but you can still go to that link and sign up to be notified if I ever do this type of event again. So I'd love to see you at my workshop. This is something I have not done for over a year, and I've had several requests to do it again. So I am putting this out there. I don't know when I'll be doing it again. So if you're at all interested, go to livinghomegrown.com/event to learn all the details. And I hope to see you there. Okay, let's dive into today's episode all about cheese. Here we go.
And in fact, because organic milk is not yet to the point of selling more often than the regular milk, organic milk companies will more often ultra-pasteurize their milk because they're trying to do that for a longer shelf life and long travel times across the U.S. And so it really is important to look for that label on the milk carton that just says pasteurized.
This is the Living Homegrown Podcast, episode 164.
Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast, where it's all about how to live farm fresh without the farm. To help guide the way to a more flavorful and sustainable lifestyle is your host, national PBS TV producer and canning expert, Teresa Lowe.
Okay, so I don't normally start the podcast episode like this, but I wanted to let you know that today's episode is an encore presentation. My team and I are working on a new project, and so we didn't want to just skip out on not delivering a podcast episode, so we're delivering one of our very favorites with Claudia Lucero. It's all about cheese making. Only it's about cheese making in less than an hour. You will love it. So that's why today's episode might sound a little bit different. It's an encore episode. I hope you enjoy it. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Lowe, and this podcast is where we talk about living farm fresh without the farm. And that can mean fermenting, preserving, small space food growing, and just taking small steps towards living a more sustainable lifestyle. If you're interested in any of these topics or my online canning academy, just visit my website, livinghomegrown.com. This week's episode is all about making cheese at home, but not just any cheese. It's about making cheese in under an hour. Really simple recipes that we can make at home if we are just learning to make cheese or even if we have been making cheese for a long time. I invited on Claudia Lucero, who is the author of 1 Hour Cheese, and I couldn't be more excited about having her on the show. I have absolutely loved her book from the moment it came out about 1.5 years ago. Now, if you don't know Claudia, she is a cheesemaker in Portland, Oregon, and she's the owner and creator of Urban Cheesecraft. Those are these little kits that you can buy online or even in places like Williams-Sonoma that have everything in there for you to make all different kinds of cheeses. So they're little DIY cheese kits, and each kit makes a different type of cheese. It has everything that you need except for the milk. So you buy the kit, you go out and get the milk, and then you can be well on your way to making your own cheese. Now, Claudia started making these DIY cheese kits back in 2009, and even today she still teaches cheese making classes all across the country. But one of her most recent projects, which I didn't even know about until we did this interview, is that she has a new kit coming out that is dairy-free, vegan, paleo cheese. And it's a kit to make that type of cheese. It will be coming out right around the time that this episode airs. So the timing couldn't be more perfect. And in the interview, Claudia tells us all about this particular cheese kit. And so I'll let her give you all the description. But I wanted to have Claudia on the show because I find that diving into cheese making, a lot of people have the same fears or trepidations that they have with doing that versus canning and preserving or fermenting. If you go to research how to do it, it can be a little bit overwhelming and can even be a little bit scary if you start worrying about safety issues. In my situation, I was lucky enough to grow up with a mom who learned how to make cheese and would make cheese at home. So I had someone to watch and to see how easy it is and how rewarding it can be. But if you don't have that, then making cheese can definitely be a little bit scary. But Claudia's book and her kits take all the guesswork out of it. And her book, 1 Hour Cheese, is a fantastic introduction into making cheese because no recipe in that book takes longer than an hour. And it doesn't matter if you're a beginner or not. Even if you have made cheese before, the book has so many fantastic recipes that are really quick and easy. You'll end up using these recipes to make all kinds of fresh cheese. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, how in the world could we make a cheese in an hour? Doesn't it take months and months of aging to make a cheese? Well, what this book is and what Claudia specializes in are fresh cheeses. So these are the kind of cheeses, you know, more like a cream cheese or like a mozzarella cheese, something that you make and eat in the fresh state, unlike a hard cheese that has to age many, many months or even years before it has the refined flavor that you're going for. And by diving into these fresh cheeses, these 1 hour cheeses, you get a really good handle on how cheese is made, the science behind it, and yet you still have a huge selection of different types of cheese to make. And then if later you want to dive deeper and get into aging cheeses, you can absolutely do that once you have these cheeses under your belt. So it's a great starting point. Now, as Claudia talks to us, she's going to give a lot of information about cheese making, but she's also going to walk us through a really simple beginner recipe. And I don't want you to worry about writing that down. I will have the entire recipe in the show notes for this episode, and you can go there and print it out when you're ready to make it. And I will have links to everything that Claudia has, her kits, her website, and her book. Also, I will include a link to this really cute Etsy video that talks all about Claudia and her kits and what she does. And it's kind of nice if you want to watch that to put a face to the voice that you'll be hearing. I'll have all of that in the show notes. And to get to the show notes, you just go to livinghomegrown.com/164. Okay, so I think you're really going to enjoy this interview and you'll learn a lot. So let's just dive right into it. Here's my interview with Claudia Lucero from Urban Cheesecraft and the author of 1 Hour Cheese. Hey, Claudia, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, Teresa. I'm so happy to be here.
This is going to be a great topic for my listeners because a lot of them are into eating locally. They care about what's in their food. A lot of them are into making everything from their own yogurt to starting to can their own food and grow their own food. And I think cheese making is just like the next step in this whole process. So I just am very, very excited about talking about this today. So thank you. To start out, though, I would love for you to tell the audience just a little bit about yourself and how you got into cheese making.
Well, it's really interesting because everything you just said was pretty much my inspiration, eating locally, eating seasonally, and it kind of went along with a move from San Diego, California, where I grew up, to Portland, Oregon. And so getting here and suddenly being in a completely different climate and seeing different foods and actually seeing more seasons and the availability of food really inspired me to see what I could find at those particular seasons. So I moved here in December. And so you can just imagine not a lot was, you know, fresh and, right, and available. Really, it did make me pause and think, okay, well, what is available now? So I had cabbages and, you know, collards and all of that kind of stuff. And so I just kind of started with sauerkraut and making things that would make me feel healthy during the winter and the rainy season. And then come spring, I joined a CSA. So that's community supported agriculture. And usually what that means is you'll pay the farmer a larger sum in advance for a weekly basket of seasonal vegetables throughout the year. And so then that started, and I really started getting familiar with what grows here in my local climate through the seasons. And so as I was getting a ton of green beans, a ton of beets, and these were things that, you know, I would buy once in a while in San Diego, but here they became a mainstay because this is what I'd paid for, and this, you know, was an investment. And so just it made me dive deeper into preserving and making the most out of everything that I was getting. And then, you know, because of lactofermentation, you start looking into making yogurt, which is also a cultured food. And then I started getting into butter and cultured butter and just kind of all started getting into cheese. You know, all things lead to cheese, it seems. So it was this really natural progression for me, really fun time of discovery. And then, you know, once I got to stretching my own mozzarella and culturing my own goat cheese overnight, there was just no going back.
That's really exciting. Yes. You know, it's something about mozzarella. I have a memory of my mom when she first learned to make cheese, and her and my dad both, they took a cheese making class, and watching them make the mozzarella was so exciting. I was probably
that stretch.
Yeah.
Right?
I was probably like 8 years old, and I have such a memory of that and the way it tasted. And it's amazing thing. And that people just don't do that anymore. And I love that people are turning back to that. And
oh, me too. Yeah. And you're right. It really is this moment of awe where you think, wow, why haven't I done this earlier? You can really do this at home. And just the flavor, it's like nothing. No matter how fresh you get a cheese out at a shop, it's not going to be as good as what you make at home.
Yeah, it's kind of like the way a homegrown tomato is the most amazing thing. And
even precisely.
A farmer's market tomato is good, you know, the next best thing, but homegrown, right, is like the ultimate. And it is definitely that way with cheese. Well, so then you got so into it, then you went on and you created the urban cheese craft business. So explain that.
Right. And so as I was creating, you know, my first kind of crude cheeses at home, which I thought were still amazing because it's just, you know, that scientific moment. It seems so magical when you get curds and whey from this milk that, you know, you grew up with and just didn't think twice about, really. And all of a sudden you turn that gallon into some delicious cheese. I started sharing it. So with my coworkers, with neighbors, with friends and family, and everyone would ask, how the heck did you make cheese? And I had no idea you could do this. And, you know, I would start telling them, well, you go to this website to get this ingredient, and then you have to drive about an hour from here to the country to get these other ingredients, and then you got to find a farmer. And their eyes would just glaze over. And I thought, okay, this has got to be, you know, easier. I'm able to do this at home, no problem. I've done all this research. I'm refining the recipes, you know, for just like a 1 gallon pot versus like 5 gallons or 25 gallons, which some of the recipes I was starting with were for, meant for like small farms and dairies and things like that. So now that I'd done all this work, I thought, well, why don't I just put everything I've learned and all of these ingredients that I found myself into cute little boxes and put them on Etsy. Etsy, you know, is a handmade marketplace, and really kind of starting up and gaining some ground. This was in about 2008 when I was thinking about it. And so I just thought, what a great way to start a little business on there. I was always kind of entrepreneurial and I had a lot of student loans, so a lot of motivation.
Yes, yes.
As I'm working at a nonprofit, which I loved, but, you know, didn't pay much more than my monthly expenses. So that was kind of the beginning of it. Friends interested, and then my idea for an Etsy shop. And then it just took off.
Well, and the boxes are really cute. They're still really cute. And you have several different cheeses. And I love that you even have the really good cheesecloth in the kit.
Yes. Yeah. It's a must.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we'll talk about as we get into the recipe. But so what are some of the cheese kits that you have right now? And I think they're even available on Williams-Sonoma. I saw them one time.
Yeah. So they came to me, I think about 2-3 years into my business and said, you know, we've tested a couple of cheese kits out there and we love yours and we'd like to see if you could create a custom line for us. And so that was quite a ride. I mean, what a growth spurt and, you know, growing pains and a lot of exciting stuff. And, you know, I never went to business school, so it was just kind of trial by fire. And that was a really, really good learning experience and just super fun collaboration. So they chose some of my cheese kits, and then I made some that were just custom for them that included like local Portland honey and lavender and rosemary. So they were interested in that kind of thing. And then the ones that I make, I have burrata, mascarpone, of course, the classic and favorite mozzarella, ricotta. And then I really like international foods, and I'm Mexican, so I grew up with all these wonderful fresh Mexican cheeses. So I did a queso blanco, queso fresco for them, paneer, which I love, and curries. If you've never had it, it's like, you know, it's a vegetarian protein, and it's not fair to compare it to tofu, but it really does look a little bit like it and it behaves a little bit like it, but it's like 100 times better tasting.
I'm gonna have to try that. Yeah, I have not.
Oh,
I've never made
so
it
good.
Yeah,
and it's like the easiest cheese you could possibly make, and I'm just always convincing people that if you've not made cheese, that's a great way to go.
Didn't you say it was your gateway cheese in your book?
It was. Exactly. And like I said, it's the easiest. I mean, you literally almost boil milk and pour in any kind of acid, whether that be a citric acid solution, some fresh lemon juice, or some vinegar, and it will just happen. And then all you have to do is press it, and that really compresses it down to something that you can slice, and then you can fry it, you can put it in stews and curries. And the neat thing about it is it doesn't melt. It's made in such a way and heated to such a temperature that the curd is really nice and tough. And so that's what I mean, that you can kind of use it like tofu or like chicken breast instead, you know, in those dishes, because it won't disintegrate and melt. It's this really delicious just protein alternative. So let's see, did I cover all the cheeses? I think maybe goat cheese I didn't mention. And then now I even have dairy-free cheese kits. So I'm all over the place.
You are. You are. So what is used for a dairy-free cheese? What is, if you're not using milk, what are you using?
Right. Yeah, so interesting question, the way that you said it, because the reason and sort of the inspiration for these was that almost at every class or demonstration I would lead, someone in the audience or the class would ask, can I just replace the goat's milk or the cow's milk with almond milk or soy milk? And you just can't. You know, those milks don't have the protein and the calcium and everything in the quantities required for the rennet to do its job, for the citric acid to do its job. So I had to look at it from a whole other angle. And what I've done is used actual nuts and seeds. Mix them with water. Yes. And then you blend those with water, and you can add fermented foods if you want a little bit more of a funky flavor. But even just a really simple cashew with a little bit of water in the blender makes a wonderful ricotta. And so, you know, to get that fat and that satisfying mouthfeel, you really do need the real food rather than just like a watered down milk. You can, there are alternatives that you can make with like, say, a full fat coconut milk or something like that. But really, the best results have been with like nice soaked cashews, almonds, almond flour, macadamia nuts, pine nuts. You can really have a lot of fun with it, just like you can with dairy cheese.
That is fascinating. I had no idea.
Science, you know, is as exciting for me, I think, as dairy cheese.
Yeah. Well, that is really awesome, because I know there's a lot of people who would be interested in that and in making something without milk. And so that's one of your kits that you have.
Yeah, two brand new kits. And I did a Kickstarter in order to fund these, kind of partly because I'd never done a Kickstarter and I kind of wanted to see what all the hubbub was about to get something funded and get people behind a product before it was actually launched. But also because so many people requested it that I thought, well, let's see if this really is something that there's a demand and need for. And I love, you know, I come from nonprofit and social work. And so I love solving a problem and filling a need. And so that's how I went about it. And so these new kits are going to be out in October, but I do have one already on my shop for mozzarella and ricotta. That was sort of my test kit.
Okay, fantastic. Well, this episode will be coming out in mid-October, so I'll be sure to link in the show notes to your kits because I'm sure people will be interested in after hearing about it. Just hearing you talk about it made me hungry. So.
And, you know, I think because I come from a cheesemaking perspective, from traditional dairy cheesemaking perspective, my standards were higher. And that was one of the reasons I resisted doing this, even though it's been requested of me for so many years, is that, you know, the vegan cheeses that I saw on the market and that I tasted always left a lot to be desired. And so I thought, if that's what it is, then that's not what I want to make. But I was really able to, you know, sometimes I would literally have a hunk of brie next to me as I was testing the cashew brie to try to get it as close as I possibly could in texture and mouthfeel and richness. And that, I think, really makes a big difference.
Oh, I'm sure it does. And the fact that you knew exactly what it should taste and feel like, that I'm sure makes all the difference in your research and testing. So yeah, I'm excited about that. Okay, well, I will definitely link to that in the show notes. So
thank you.
Yeah, well, okay, so let's dive into your book a little bit. So I was so excited when I saw this book on the shelf because a lot of people want to do cheese making, but they think it's kind of a scary thing. So what made you, first of all, want to write this book, 1 Hour Cheese?
So along with putting the kits on Etsy, I started teaching classes here locally in Portland. And what I noticed is the ones that were really popular were the ones where we would make cheese from beginning to end during that hour, hour and a half that the class was held in. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, just kind of kept that in my mind. And then people would ask me in the classes what books I would recommend. And I recommended a couple, and there's some classics, you know, that have been around since the 70s that I learned from. But they were huge. There were maybe, you know, sometimes 250 cheeses in these books. And they weren't really organized in a way that would let a beginner know which ones to start with. And so I started making all these mental notes of, if I were to write a book, what would it be like? And so by the time that Workman Publishing came my way and asked if I would be interested, I already knew, okay, this is what I want. I want a lot of photos because people come to these classes to see if they're doing, if things look the way they should. Mm-hmm. You know, like, does the curd look right? Does the whey, is it supposed to be more clear? All those little details that when you're nervous, they really make a difference. And so I wanted a lot of photos in there, and I wanted the cheeses to all be for beginners. And then it just sort of turned out that all of them were made in under an hour. So it just became this great complete book.
Yeah. And I think it makes people want to try it because they're like, ah, I've got an hour. I could give this
right.
a shot. Yeah. Well, so if someone wants to start making cheese, what would you say are some of the benefits? What are some of the reasons that people should want to make their own cheese at home?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times I hear other cheesemakers and cheese authors say it's not actually more economical. But that is if you age cheeses, because you lose so much moisture when you age. And that's part of the aging process. The cheeses get dry and more concentrated and they're wonderful, but it's very true. You start with a lot of milk and end up with a very small amount of cheese in comparison. So that's that part. But when you're making fresh cheeses and you're eating them as soon as you make them, and because we've made them in an hour, we haven't lost a lot of moisture, it is actually more economical. So you can get a gallon of milk and you're going to get almost 2 pounds of cheese. So that's really a pretty good yield.
Yes.
And that would be for simple cheeses like ricotta and paneer, and then the one that we're going to talk about today, fromage facile. So that's one, more economical. And then one thing that I developed and then that I started encouraging in my students is that it, just like we were talking about vegetables, it connects you more to your local farmers, to what's going on with your food, even at the grocery store. It starts getting you to read labels because the less processed your milk is, the best the better your cheese making experience and the better tasting your cheese is going to be. And so you just suddenly become very interested in milk. And I mean, I even tell people to call the 1-800 number on cartons, which, you know, most of us don't even know is there. But I think the most exciting and my favorite part of it is that you can customize your cheeses to be any flavor. So at the store, you're going to get mozzarella, you know, the classic white regular mozzarella. Mm-hmm. You might get a marinated mozzarella or something like that, but can you get like a red pepper, cracked black pepper, or chive, or basil, or oregano mozzarella? Not usually.
No.
And when you make it, you can completely make it to your taste and make these beautiful flavored cheeses. So that's my favorite part, the customization.
Yeah, flavor is awesome. Flavor is the ultimate, absolutely. Well, okay, so when someone's first looking at cheese making, I know it can be very similar to when someone's first looking at canning food. They have a little trepidation. They're wanting to start, but they might be a little bit nervous about it. So isn't that usually what is the biggest challenge for a beginner, that they have a little bit of a fear over it?
Yes, and I do talk about this in my book in the beginning, and just say, okay, get out of your head everything you've assumed about, you know, you have to have raw milk, and raw milk is going to kill you, and there's going to be mold everywhere, and you have to use bleach in your whole kitchen. None of that is true when you're first starting out and making these fresh cheeses. This is just as safe, and it requires the same amount of cleanliness as making a pot of soup or pasta. You don't need to do any of that because we're not aging, and in aging, you have to control what kind of bacteria and mold is growing. Here, we're not doing any of that. So that's the first thing to let go of. You know, you're not having to bleach your kitchen from head to toe. I just use hot water, vinegar, regular soap, just like you would clean your kitchen normally. And then the rest is just about following the recipes and starting out with some good quality supplies, which we can talk about some more.
Sure. Yes. And I think you're so true in that it's a big fear of the molds when you're aging. And that makes sense, because when you're aging a cheese, there are certain cheese molds that you want and certain things that you don't want. And since there's always little spores in the air, that's why people get paranoid about it. But that's not what we're doing here. We're making fresh cheese and then we're eating it right away. So which is not a problem because it tastes so good. It goes really fast. Yeah. Okay, fantastic. So let's dive into talking about the recipe. What's this beginner recipe that you like to share with people who are just starting?
Yes. So I call this cheese fromage facile, and it's kind of my little tongue-in-cheek name because I want it to sound fancy, but really it just means easy cheese in French.
I love that.
Yeah. See, and that's another perk. When you make your own cheese, you can just name it whatever you want.
Perfect. Perfect.
So, okay. Fromage facile is a small batch. And so for beginners, it means it's going to be made actually in even about 25 minutes. So not even the whole hour. So a quart of milk, whole cow's milk. And we want to, like I mentioned, get the best quality milk that we have. And if that just happens to be pasteurized grocery store whole milk, great. If you have a local farm or buying raw milk is legal in your state and you can find that, then great. You can do that as well. And usually in the book, I'll say when whole milk is the best, or maybe skim milk is a good idea, for example, with string cheese. And so in this case, it's whole milk.
So before you move on to the rest of the recipe, I want to just talk about milk for just a second, because you have a fantastic whole section in your book talking all about the different types of milk that we can get. And I know that there's a big difference between pasteurized and ultra pasteurized. So could you just talk for a second about what it is that we need to get? Because if someone gets ultra pasteurized, it won't work as well, correct?
Correct, right. Okay, so pasteurized milk is just the most common milk. But what started to happen is that companies have started to ultra pasteurize. And what that does is heats milk to such a temperature that it denatures the calcium and the protein, and it makes it a whole lot more difficult to get a curd, to get coagulation, that separation between curds and whey. And so I always say avoid ultra pasteurized milk. If it is the only thing you have available to you, you might be able to get a very loose ricotta when you're trying to make a firm cheese, which is not a good result. So I would just say avoid it if possible. Pasteurized, as I said, is the most common. And if you can access raw, which means it has not been pasteurized, it's pretty much just come out of the animal and has been strained.
Okay.
And then bottled.
Okay, perfect. And then now organic, if we can get it, organic is good. But just because it's organic does not mean that it hasn't been pasteurized or ultra pasteurized, right?
Very good point. And in fact, because organic milk is not yet to the point of selling more often than the regular milk, organic milk companies will more often ultra pasteurize their milk because they're trying to do that for a longer shelf life and long travel times across the US. And so it really is important to look for that label on the milk carton that just says pasteurized.
Okay, so this is where we learn how to read the carton or read the box or the carton or the bottle that it's coming in and look really carefully. So we want pasteurized is okay. Ultra pasteurized is what we want to avoid. And I know in my normal supermarket, most of the milks are ultra pasteurized because they'll, like you said, last for a very long time on the shelf. Instead of 30 days, it's like 60 or more days, I think.
Right.
And then the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, though, is about homogenized versus non-homogenized. Does that make
right.
a difference?
Not in these fresh cheeses. So what that means is the fat distributed throughout the entire carton of milk, or is the fat up at the top resting like cream, you know, like more old-fashioned milk? And so, no, in this case, you can use either or. A lot of the times what I like to do if I get that great quality milk is skim that some of that cream and make some butter, which is why I included the recipe in the book as well.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Making your own butter is just an incredible experience as well. Okay. So we can get pasteurized. It's or if it's organic, that's great. And people, I really liked that you had this in your that you mentioned this in your book, that people can get confused when they see pastured milk. It pastured milk just means it's grass fed, not that it's pasteurized.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And it has, you know, taken me aback sometimes when I started seeing the label of pastured. It was like a double take where I thought, wait a second, what were they talking about? But yeah, that's when it's they're actually allowed to go out on pasture and eat grass as cows should.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. So yeah, just so everyone's aware, and you have this all spelled out beautifully in the book. So if they get the book, they will totally understand what they're looking for. Okay, so let's back to our recipe now. So we're using just pasteurized milk is fine. And mm-hmm. then so we have 1 quart of pasteurized milk or 4 cups. Then what's the next thing that we need?
The cup of cultured buttermilk. And in this case, we also want to avoid the ultra pasteurized with any of the dairy in making cheese. And so cultured buttermilk is typically low fat milk that has bacteria cultures added so that it gets that tangy flavor like you get with yogurt. And so we're using it not only for flavor, but for that acidity. But then along with that, we're adding some lemon juice so that we get acidity from the additional acidity from the lemon juice without getting such a strong lemon flavor.
Okay.
And then that's it. Simply after that, you just add salt to taste. And if you want to add some herbs, you can do that as well. And you can do anything from, you know, herbs of Provence, which is, you know, has a nice strong lavender flavor, or some fresh basil from your garden.
Fantastic. Okay. So we have all of this milk and buttermilk and our lemon juice. And then do we need any special tools while we're making this other than a pot?
Right. So a standard pot that you have at home, if you're going to be making cheese often, I would say we need to avoid corrosive metals. So like a cast iron pot will not be good for this. Same with an uncoated aluminum pot. So avoid those two. But other than that, a standard stainless steel or enamel coated pot, both of those are great. You don't really have to be too careful at this level of cheese making with, you know, having everything be glass and stainless steel as far as your measuring cups, measuring spoons and spoons, but, you know, it makes everything easier to wash and to clean. And then the couple of things that I said that I include in the kits to make sure that people have success are the good quality cheesecloth. So sadly, what is called cheesecloth at most grocery stores is that really gauzy, super holy you know, it's almost like gauze, really. It's like,
yeah,
you know, to be a mummy for Halloween.
Yeah, exactly.
But you really need a much tighter. And so if you're looking at like thread count for sheets, this is 90. You can go up as high as 120, I think I've seen it be. But you just really need to be able to catch tiny curds and let liquid go through. So any cloth that you have that you can clean and use for this purpose would work.
So like a tea towel, a fresh clean tea towel would work if we didn't have the cheesecloth?
Right. That'd
okay.
be great.
Okay.
And then a thermometer. And it's a really basic thermometer, but you just need it to be consistent and to work. And so the most common measurements for thermometer will be from 0 degrees Fahrenheit to 220 degrees Fahrenheit. And we're going to work between those temperatures. And sometimes you'll run into a candy thermometer that will jump in degrees by like 5 or 10. That's not detailed enough. So you need the ticks to just be 1 or 2.
Got it. Okay.
And that's it.
Okay. So what do we do first?
Okay. So you're going to put that milk in your pot, turn it to about medium, and then just stay nearby. Remember, this cheese is going to be done beginning to end in about 20, 25 minutes. So it's not a passive process. You kind of have to hang around the whole time, especially because we're going to heat the milk to 175, which is a good, you know, you're getting to simmer it. And you do that while stirring the bottom every once in a while to make sure that the sugars, the lactose in the milk, don't stick to the bottom of your pot, and then you're going to have a messy layer to clean up later. So, you know, just simmer it calmly, get it up to 175, and then you're going to pour in your cup of buttermilk, your 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, and you should instantly see a separation between curds and whey. But then at that point, you just take the pot off the heat, turn off the heat, and you let it sit a few minutes, 5-10 minutes. I don't remember what I say in the recipe, but not very long. Just 5 minutes. And in that time, that curd that has already separated just gets a chance to cook and release a little bit more of the whey, and that's going to give us the right texture. And that's something that happens a lot with cheese making recipes, is how long you let something rest or what temperature you go up to. All of that can really dictate how creamy or how firm your final cheese is. So, you know, once you learn that, you can use it to your advantage. So in this case, you have a very tender curd, but once you let it sit for those 5 minutes, it gets slightly more firm, because we want this final cheese to be almost the texture of a French cultured goat cheese. So a little creamy, but also a little crumbly.
Got it. Okay. This sounds really easy. Super, super easy. Yeah.
Yeah. So once it does sit for that time, you simply put it through your cheesecloth, which you have lining a colander. And if you want to use the whey, which we can talk about really great uses for whey, which is the byproduct, you know, the liquid, you place a bowl underneath that colander, and that way you'll catch that really nice clear whey. And so then the cheesecloth is going to catch your curd, and this is what's going to become your final cheese. And so you're letting the whey run out of the curd, keeping only the curd, and then the curd is what you're going to add your salt and your herbs to. And so just make sure that the curd isn't resting in the whey, so you may need to lift it at some point and move the whey, or, you know, bring in your other pot or something so that it's not resting in there. It's kind of a common thing that might happen, is that colanders are shallow, and once you put them in that pot, they toward the end, they end up sitting in that whey. It's just a little detail that you'll very easily see if you're making it yourself. So, but once it's nice and dry, that's when you can add the salt. And salt at this level of cheese making is really just for flavor, but it does actually draw out some of that remaining final whey, because, you know, salt always draws moisture out of things. And so you really are salting to taste. In the recipe, I say to use 1/4 teaspoon of flake salt. You can use sea salt, pickling salt, table salt even. And I say just 1/4 teaspoon, because then what I do in the book is I make some fruit tarts. So it's going to be for a dessert. But if you were going to make this into, like, say, a bagel schmear kind of thing, and you're going to add sun-dried tomatoes or pesto or something like that, you might want to add a little bit more salt. So, you know, again, you're making it for yourself, custom to your taste.
This would be killer on a bagel.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really good.
It's such a versatile cheese. You can really go, like, dessert or savory with it. You can stuff pasta shells. It's great.
Oh, this sounds really good. Okay, now back, I wanted to ask you a question. In case someone has never seen curds in whey, it's kind of like a yellowy, the whey part is kind of like a yellowy liquid. And yes. It's almost like a curdling, right? Is that how you would describe it, of the milk?
The separation?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes people have seen this, like if you, you know, you put maybe, I've seen it a lot with plant milks, like if you put soy milk into hot coffee, it'll separate and looks really awful.
Yes, yes.
Or, you know, it'll look sort of like cottage cheese floating in lemonade is what I like to tell people.
Ah, that's a good description. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right. Yes. Yeah, so really simple. So we kind of let it hang there so it's not sitting in the way. And then do we mix in the, if we want to mix in herbs, would we mix it in at that point?
Yeah. So you can either take your nice drained curds out of the cheesecloth and put them in a bowl, or sometimes, because I'm just being quick, I mix the salt right into the colander, sort of treating that as my bowl, and then I transfer it. So, but let's say that we take the curds out and transfer them to a bowl, and then this is when you can have fun with flavoring. Now they should be really creamy, especially once you start stirring your salt in. That process really helps to get you the texture that we're after, because while curds are warm, they will kind of want to stick together and shape to whatever vessel they're in. So say you just let them sit passively in a bowl while they're hot. Well, you might pop those out and they might be in the shape of a bowl.
Right.
So what we're doing as we're stirring the salt in is kind of creaming the curd and getting it all salted really nice and evenly, but also really making the texture nice and creamy.
Fantastic. Okay. And then when we're all finished, how long would we be able to keep this? How long would it last?
About a week.
A week.
About
okay.
A week. These fresh cheeses, because they have so much moisture in them, they are really kind of for a week's worth of use.
Okay. And this would be a good amount for a week. You'd probably just be just right. You'd eat that up with your family and then you could make another batch.
Right. And the really great thing is you can, for most of these recipes, quadruple them or cut them in half. You can really customize them.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. Now, one of the things I know from reading your book is that most cheeses, or maybe all cheeses, need to have an acid. And in this case, we were using the buttermilk and the lemon juice as our acid to make the separation and create the cheese. But I know that we can also use citric acid sometimes when we're making cheese. And that's something that a lot of my listeners would probably have on their pantry shelf because they're canners. So,
So
is there a way that we can use the citric acid to make cheeses sometimes?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's what I include in my kits so that it's a non-perishable acid that I can include in there. And I do actually like citric acid because it has such a neutral flavor. You can use lemon juice, lime juice, and vinegars, but they will all add their own nuanced flavor, which can be good. You can often, you know, go for that on purpose, but citric acid will always just give it the acidity that we need with the neutral flavor. So for example, with this recipe, to replace some of the acidity that we're getting with the buttermilk and with the lemon juice, I would dissolve 1 teaspoon of citric acid in about 1/4 teaspoon of water. And then at that point, when we get to the 175 temperature, drizzle it in. And as soon as you see a separation, stop drizzling. You may not need the whole solution.
Ah, okay. So we can kind of eyeball it.
Exactly.
Okay. Fantastic. That's cool. They'll be able to use some of the citric acid sitting on their shelf. So that will make it even more fun. Okay. Well, one other question I had, I was thinking as we were talking about the making a non-dairy cheese, I know one thing that a lot of people, when they're making cheese, would have to use a rennet. And I think you use a rennet in your mozzarella kit, but you say in your book that you stick to a vegetarian rennet. And I thought that was really important to note. And so I'd love for you to tell everyone what rennet is and how vegetarian rennet is different from the standard rennet, so that if they're at all squeamish about rennet, they would still want to use your book, because there's most of the recipes I don't even think have any rennet. But if they did, you recommend a vegetarian. So could you explain that?
Sure. So the cheeses in my book that would need rennet are things like mozzarella, burrata, the pepper jack, the string cheese. So you can kind of see the trend there. It's the melty, more rubbery cheeses. whereas ricotta, for example, or queso fresco or something like that is a little bit more crumbly and doesn't melt. And so that's what we get from it. And it works along with the acid to reorganize the proteins in order to be able to melt and be gooey. Let's see, your other question was, okay, because it's vegetarian.
Yes.
So this is how this started. Is not only have I been vegetarian for several years in the past, but I have a lot of friends who are vegetarian. And even though I'm not anymore, if I hosted parties with them or gave cheese as a gift, I wanted everybody to be able to eat the cheese. And so I didn't want to worry about this one has the animal rennet and this one has a vegetarian. I just knew that if I added vegetarian rennet, then everyone could eat it. And then I've also had a lot of customers who are kosher and eat that way ask about that. And so that's another diet that it's important for. The other reason I really like these tablets is that they don't expire as quickly as animal rennet does. So animal rennet maybe will last you 6 months in the refrigerator. These tablets, they're powder and you keep them in the freezer, will last up to 5 years. So I found that when people are beginners, that you may need some time, you know, and it may only be a year, but that's much better than 6 months and just being like, oh, shoot, I never got to it. I wasted my money. You know?
Yeah. And it's sometimes it's hard to find these ingredients now.
Right.
So the difference between an animal rennet and a vegetarian rennet, animal rennet is actually from the lining of a small cow or
yes.
Yeah.
And so an unweaned calf. So
yes.
In the fourth stomach, they have these enzymes that help them digest their own mother's milk. And that's why it has to be unweaned because, you know, eventually they don't drink milk anymore. They go to grass. And so it's only when they're unweaned that they have these enzymes. And so as humans long ago, we figured out that if we took the stomach and, you know, sorry if people are squeamish, but really I think it's respectful if you're going to be using an animal to use all of it. And so that's what our ancestors did. And they dry it and they grind it up and put it in a little liquid so that it's almost like a tincture. And then you just need like a drop or two of this liquid. And it's amazing how these enzymes can do that to milk. So, but also humans are smart and we figured out that plants can do this as well. And so the vegetarian rennet is from a strain of fungi. So related to the mushrooms. And so that was turned into a powder and then pressed into these tablets that you can score and just use a quarter of and, you know, makes it very easy to do.
Yeah. And that's what's so awesome about the vegetarian rennet, because a lot of people who are vegetarian or are learning to be vegetarian may not realize that that's what rennet is, you know, mm-hmm. standard animal rennet. So being able to find a vegetarian cheese is that they would not have used the animal to create the cheese, and other than the milk, if it's a milk cheese.
Right. And like you said, that's another benefit of making cheese at home. That's another decision that you can make for yourself.
Right. You can make that decision, and you can, if it's something that is very important to you, you can make sure that any cheese in your house is vegetarian rennet, and you don't have to worry about any animals being harmed in the
right.
process, which I know is very important to a lot of people. And a lot of people don't even know that that's how rennet is made.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. When I've had this conversation with people who it would matter to, they're absolutely floored to find out that that's what animal rennet is. So
yeah.
That's why I wanted to bring it up, because you talk about that in your book, and all of your kits use the vegetarian rennet. So if anyone buys a mozzarella kit from you, they are using vegetarian rennet in that kit. And I think that's really important to know. Yeah. Well, Claudia, thank you so much. This has just been fantastic. And I'm going to include all the information in the show notes for this episode, and everyone will be able to know how to get your kits and the book and everything else. So I just really appreciate you taking the time to share all this information. I think everybody will really enjoy it.
Oh, it was so fun to share. Thank you for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that encore presentation of 1 Hour Cheese with Claudia Lucero. Now, everything that we talked about, including a PDF that you can print out with her recipe and information on her website, her cheese making kits, and her books, just go to livinghomegrown.com/164 and everything will be right there for you. Thank you so much for joining me on today's encore presentation. And until next time, just try to live a little more local, seasonal, and homegrown. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Living Homegrown Podcast. Visit livinghomegrown.com to download Teresa's free canning resource guide and find more tips on how to live farm fresh without the farm. Be sure to join Teresa Lowe next time on the Living Homegrown Podcast.